2 years at Pilgrim's Academy had proved that it wasn't the public school system that was lacking. It was my attention. So in ninth grade, I began my career as a freshman at Cranberry Lake High School. The nerdy kids that I'd hung out with in elementary school decided I was too popular to hang out with them now. And while the popular kids appeared to like me, I never felt comfortable hanging out with them. Since I was failing to be comfortable playing the role of myself, I threw myself into the one thing I felt I was actually good at. Acting. My parents had taken me to an audition for the Cranberry Lake Players production of Our Town when I was six. Since then, I'd played Linus in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, been the narrator in a bunch of kids' plays, and even had the occasional small role in shows like Bye Bye Birdie and the horrendous stage version of the popular TV show MASH. Near the end of my days at Pilgrim's, a bunch of the actors from MASH decided to try and redeem themselves by getting parts in the UMass Cranberry Lake production of The Crucible. My mom decided to let me audition, since the show was supposed to be for college students and adults. The odds of them casting a 13-year-old were slim. Of course, nowhere on the audition sheet did they ask your age, and I was tall and had bad enough skin to be confused for a college student. I got not one, but two parts, which when combined were still the smallest role in the play. But I was 10 years younger than the next youngest cast member. I was invited to parties where I got to watch people get drunk and do and say spectacularly stupid things. And since I didn't have much stage time, I did some homework and some writing during rehearsals. On Wednesday nights, while we rehearsed in the big theater, an acting class took place in one of the studio rooms. Teacher didn't seem to mind if the upstairs actors crashed his course, so I sat in and watched grown men and women perform terrible monologues, improvs, and terrifying acts of mime. On monologue night, most of the students had got on the makeshift stage and performed something from Shakespeare or Sophocles. They didn't get into costume or use any props. They just boringly recited a familiar set of lines. I was about to go back to the dressing room to do my homework when one of the students said, "I'm going to do a reading from Tarzan, King of the Ape Men," a play I have been unable to track down since. He then ripped off his t-shirt and wiggled out of his jeans, revealing a leopard skin G-string. This was going to be worth sticking around for. Now, I don't remember any of the lines from the monologue. It was something that was supposed to be funny, but the lines were trite, the jokes were predictable, and while the actor showed amazing energy by leaping around the stage, he had the verbal delivery skills of a tracheotomy patient. He kept pausing for laughs that didn't come, and then, during a dramatic leap into the air, something magical happened. His left ball swung out of his G-string and hung there while he said something stupid. The class began to chuckle. The chuckle grew into a murmur of laughter and courage. The student left more frantically, delivering his static lines, and then his right ball fell out. Chaos of laughter. My face was red rocks under a waterfall. The professor was applauding. When the monologue ended, the actor did a sort of half-curtsy, half-bow, and it wasn't until his head was pointed in the direction of his crotch that he realized what everyone was laughing at. I caught every class after that, but nothing exciting happened. A week before the show opened, the director scheduled an extra rehearsal on a Tuesday night. "I don't think I can come," I told the director. "My mom's going to Florida to visit her parents, and my dad has to work."
"Can't you borrow one of your friends' cars?" she asked.
"I'm 13, I told her.
"Holy cunting fuck!" she said.
When my mom picked me up that night, the director apologized for all the time she swore in front of me.
"I thought he was 18, she said. "I knew he was a student. I just assumed he was a student here. I mean, he always goes to that acting class during rehearsals, and I thought he was in class or something."
"Don't worry about it," my mom said. "I can assure you, he's heard worse." Michael Christopher had a mouth like a sewage volcano. He knew how to swear in English, French, Spanish, Italian, German, Dutch, Portuguese, Turkish, and Japanese. And thanks to the 2 weeks I'd spent hanging out with deaf kids in summer camp, he knew how to make 10 dirty hand movements in American Sign Language. "You're a lot cooler than you were in elementary school," he said. I was grateful for his approval. Mostly because in sixth grade he'd made it a semi-weekly habit to beat the ever-loving shit out of me for no other reason than beating the shit out of me was much more entertaining than beating the shit. Somehow, while I was away in middle school, he transitioned from unpopular bully to extremely popular bully. He'd earned the nickname The Saint because he only beat up people that deserved it. It was kind of an honor to have him smack you upside your head, but despite the fact that I was smaller, weaker, and had the social skills of a shaved rabbit in a beehive, he went out of his way to be nice to me. A few weeks into the school year, his mom asked him to move a couch from the basement to the living room on the second floor. I had no concept of why he called me to help him out. I suspected subterfuge. When I got there, Michael and Bird Dick were giggling up a storm. I suppressed my fight-or-flight instinct and asked what they wanted me to do. "I am so fucking high right now," Michael said. We just, oh man, so fucking high. I grabbed one end of the couch while Michael and Bird Dick grabbed the other. When the job was finished, Michael hugged me. "Thanks, dude. We totally fucking owe you one. We're gonna go out on the power line paths and smoke some sticky stuff. Want to join us?" I remembered that commercial where little Emmanuel Lewis says, "Say no, then go and tell." But I couldn't remember whether that was about drugs, sex, or getting into cars with strangers. Yeah, but I got a doctor's appointment tonight, and I can't go stinking a pot, you know? "That's cool," Michael said. I waited for Bird Dick to make a comment, but he was too out of it to speak. Michael giggled out a, "Later, dude." Later that week, we had gym together. It was still warm enough that the teachers were making us go outside and play soccer or run track. We were supposed to come to class wearing our school clothes, change into shorts or sweatpants for class, then shower, and change back into our normal clothes when class ended. Only losers wore sweatpants in ninth grade, so we were expected to show up in shorts. Usually, I packed a clean pair in my backpack, but on this day, I'd forgotten, but I remember Michael owed me one. "Hey, Saint, I forgot my shorts at home. Do you have a pair I could borrow?" "Sure," Michael said, pulling his off. "Take mine." I turned away as quickly as possible. His ass was exquisite.
"Stop looking at his ass, you fucking cocksucker," said one of Michael's sidekicks. "I'm gonna pound the fuck out of you."
I balled up my fists. I knew I couldn't take them, but I was determined to fight as long as it took to save heterosexual face.
"Yeah, Bruno," Michael said. "My ass is no entrado, beato."
Oh. They weren't talking to me. Bruno was a kid named Liam Brunelli who'd moved to Cranberry Lake from Chicago at the beginning of the school year. He was chubby and red-faced. His head was way too large for his body. And at the moment, his too large head was being slammed into a locker by a member of Michael's meat-headed fan club. I decided to risk detention by wearing my jeans and ran out of the locker room before anyone remembered I had started this. That weekend, my father decided to play a round of golf at the local country club, and I screwed around at the putting green and at the driving range while he played. I was on the green when I saw Michael drive by on one of his carts.
"Hey, Saint!" I shouted.
He drove the cart towards me.
"What's up?"
"Not much. I didn't know you worked here."
"Yeah," he said, looking in the direction of the clubhouse. "My dad owns it."
"Cool," I said. "Listen, they closed the boathouse at Davis Pond for the winter, and Kevin Harris and I were thinking of breaking in next weekend and having a party. I was thinking if you wanted to come and bring some beer or whatever." Michael looked at the ground.
"Look."
And then he paused. "Doom.
You're a lot cooler than you were before you went away to military school or whatever, but look, you've got to stop hanging out with that Harris kid. Jeremy says he's a total fucking Fruit Loop who used to, like, grab Jeremy's junk when he was just a kid. I mean, you do plays and shit, so, you know, I get that you're probably a fag too, but you're at least cool about it. But if you spend any time hanging out with Kevin Harris where people can see you, I don't know how much longer people will talk to you. I froze. Bird dick. That stupid, crying, faggy bird dick. I started to say, I'm not gay, you know, when I realized that Michael was already halfway to the clubhouse, and he didn't look too pleased with himself. A look I wore later that day when I told Kevin Harris I wasn't going to break into the boathouse with him. You've been listening to the In Safe Mode podcast, part 3, Hanging Out in Public, brought to you by Docksiders Boat Shoes and White Privilege, two things that don't necessarily go together but have often been seen hanging out at parties. For more information, go to www.crookedtreehouse.com. Today's intro music was Tarzan Boy by Paul Tamora, and the outro music playing right now is Possum Kingdom by the Toadies. Please stay tuned after the credits for a special appearance by Samuel L. Jackson and others.